ready? Okay. Issue section 332, current registration request for personal meeting. I'm optimistically assuming that you're here because you have experience. You have some connection with the idea of New Age experience. And I know it's a large umbrella for a wide variety of experiences. What makes the topic New Age? I want to quote William James, who is the father of mapping the mind and religious experience as well as spiritual, mental, and psychological experience. He has this to say, a normal waking consciousness, rational consciousness, as we call it, is but one special type of consciousness. Keep in mind this was written in 1902. That's all about it, quite excited by the filmiest of screens, there are potential forms of consciousness in higher existence. We may go through life without suspecting their existence, but apply the requisite stimulus and at a touch, they are there in all completeness. Definite types of mentality which probably somewhere have their field of application and adaptation. No account of the universe in its totality can be final, which leaves these other forms of consciousness quite disconcerting. And that is what New Age research is about. Essentially, the work of exploring human experiences which are presently unexplained by the contemporary mainstream scientific world. And each of us has had profound experiences which are not scientifically knowable. They may not be verifiable, that is, we cannot prove to anyone that they exist, and they may not be reliable, meaning we cannot generate them again by setting up the exact same variables. Without being verifiable or reliable, we do not come under scientific inquiry. In some ways, New Age can be compared to the Renaissance of Western Europe, which was also a rebirth of the value of human experience. Prior to the European Renaissance, the Catholic Church was held to be the only authority on the validity of human experience. Man himself was not justified in looking to his own experience as evidence of anything worthwhile to be known. His thoughts were judged only against the authority of that church and men who held themselves to be God's representative. I don't believe this is so much a matter of suppressing experience for the general population so much as it seems to have been a cultural acknowledgement to all strata of society that the authority of God, which was to them undeniably present in the Catholic Church and even a political authority of their day, that the authority of God absolutely superseded in importance any individual experience. The Renaissance burst on the scene from diverse locations in Europe, infusing the arts with a focus of attention on human experience. We consider this, from our vantage point, to be one of the most sublime periods in the history of recorded civilization. Men, mostly all over Europe, began looking to their own experience to communicate ideas and emotions. Arts, music, literature became alive as it became real. It was the Renaissance which made possible the age of enlightenment. Only when the experience of common man became valuable could the scientific method be developed. When the dignity of even the common man, the dignity of common women would have to wait a while longer, became a valid social and political ideal, then general laws of nature could be conceived, theorized, and tested. Ironically, it was this very scientific method, the law of common law by which the world operates, which now occasions the suspect perception, even the derision, of the honoring of individual human experience, which gave rise to its existence. Those of us who value New Age experience can be Renaissance women and men in true sense of the term. Valuing what the previous age has provided us in terms of religious ideas and scientific methods, not thereafter ceasing to value individual experience simply because there is no way to apply it in the context of the previous age. The 16th century Renaissance artists, there was little way to place their experience in the context of religious dogma of the day. They painted religious scenes and did so beautifully, but not so beautifully as when they actually moved out of the confining context and explored their own experience. Our view of 15th and 16th century art revealed exactly what the difference is meant to art among us. For New Age Renaissance men and women who may not be able to put their experiences in the current scientific context of our day, we can imagine ourselves supported by the same spirit that moved Renaissance thought. There are some chairs over here. Feel free to come. Individual experience enlarges and gives additional meaning to the current mainstream ways of knowing, eventually giving rise to an understanding of the world that will far exceed the current imagination of what is possible. They will eventually be seen as an important development of new knowledge, not in direct opposition, but as a necessary addition to scientific ways of knowing. Our own doctrinal heritage directs us to seek meaning from our own personal experience. We are taught that the whole purpose of this earth is to facilitate our experience with good and evil. And the temporal experience confirms us. The restoration was accomplished by a young boy responding to his own personal experience with religious revival, scripture, and prayer, in spite of the opposition of current authorities. Our emphasis on the Holy Ghost and personal revelation set us apart from all other doctrinal religions. However, that increases our disappointment when our experiences are not well received or even acknowledged. The American Psychology Association, the Venerable APA, is opening to individual experience as a source of important inquiry. Although experiences can be verified and they are not reliable, in scientific ways, they're still being studied. This fairly new book, actually put out by the APA, gives freedom to our experiences of the following things: hearing voices, seeing things that aren't there, out-of-body experiences, clairvoyance, even alien abduction, near-death experience, healing experiences, and other mysteries. The interesting thing is these are being recognized as not being associated with pathology, but with normal human experience. For example, 10% of the general population that is not schizophrenic is worse or has heard them and is incorporated them into their life. 67% of people believe that they've had a clairvoyant experience, where they've known something they could not have known in another way, or a telepathic experience. The interesting thing is these are associated with increased positive functions, especially lucid dreaming, experience of past life, and so on. Our panel today will each give you just a few minutes of introduction of themselves, and then it's going to be an open forum for you to share your own experience or ask questions or simply throw out ideas. We'll spend the rest of the hour doing that. So each will just take a few minutes to introduce themselves. We have with us Dan Weatherspoon first, and we'll just go in the order it is in the program. Dan Weatherspoon, Joe Dawson, Sharon Kennedy, and Sarah Mason.
Thanks, Joseph. Again, I'm Dan Weatherspoon. You may recognize Dan, the one with the circles under the eyes. This is the last of a long conference from our end of it, and we hope you're enjoying yourself and that you'll come back next year. We'll keep going. I'm grateful to be here, and before we begin my remarks, I'd like everybody to close their eyes and take some time to breath for this. I'm tempted to have the visualized 12 pieces of this point. I kind of did that just as a way of, you can thank you for going along with me. To kind of illustrate the rub I feel in sort of admitting here that I'm a closet New Ager, that I've dabbled, been interested in, and ultimately I've come to accept and at least entertain many New Age thoughts and ideas in my worldview. And at the same time, I still want to come across as a credible person, a doctorate in, you know, religion and all those other fun things that I may have done in my life. And it's a little bit sort of hard to admit because of that lift around on the beach and chant for world peace with, you know, the 100th monkey. I mean, again, some of these principles I actually believe in, but yet the association with the New Age is difficult to sometimes want to always admit or use those terms. Let me just tell you a little bit about my own predisposition, and that is this grand theory. I've always sort of in my life, even as a child, sort of sensed that I wanted just to see whatever really was in the world and try to figure out a way to make it fit. And so as a part of my doctoral program at Claremont, I had the opportunity to take a class in parapsychology. And I'd been interested in parapsychology a little bit, and this was a first serious encounter. And I remember specifically the reason I signed up for that course. I said, okay, how much of this stuff do I have to admit into my theory of the universe? You know, I want to look at it. And like it was a very good course. It was a semester long, so we probably read 250 to 300 pages a week. We did a full third of the course on the skeptical stuff. We did another third on the real, more clinical, you know, the studies in ESP and all the different things like that. And then we did a third of the course in our personal experiences and perhaps the more anecdotal things we read through to the training, all the NDE stuff. And anyway, it was a wonderful course, and I'll have to admit that through it, I ended up deciding that I got to admit a lot of it. I'll let you know, I still struggle very much with astrology. I can't quite figure out how that might work, though I'm trying to listen to people who tell me how much that means in their life. I can't quite figure it out theoretically how it works. I still struggle with genuine precognition. You know, this idea that you do this because in my sort of sense of us really being in time, it's very difficult for me to think that the future can go backwards and affect the past, which would be what is required in that. And so you would have to go to a sort of God or perspective outside of time in order to make that all work. And again, I struggle with that. But for the most part, I buy into a lot of it, and I feel happy that we as Mormons, I think our metaphysics can speak very well. We have these genuine starting principles, this sort of character of the universe, of an eternal intelligence, and sort of that we're all connected internally to each other through this thing called the light of Christ, whatever that means. I sort of just interpret that as just meaning the fundamental connection between us all. And so I don't really struggle with someone who is perhaps turned off the cognitive filters to such a degree that they can really get in tune with somebody's heart instead, because again, my sense is Mormons can speak well, and my own view of the world, it speaks well that we really know what's going on with each other at a deep level, and if we train ourselves or whatever it means. I was part of the chair of a session scrying yesterday, and it doesn't matter if it's a crystal ball or whatever it would be, whatever focus or tool it means, I'm fairly comfortable. There's lots of ways that people can get rid of the noise, tune into the heart, tune into the sense and the essence of the person, and actually most of these phenomena, at least in parapsychology, are quite reasonable to me when you do that. So again, metaphysical Mormonism, I think, does quite well. Of course, there's always official Mormonism, which kind of tends to clutch our things. And so for comfort, I turn to Sterling McMurrin, and just a little bit of a statement that kind of, to me, I think really speaks well to the relationship between the two. So it is obvious that whatever metaphysical considerations may be basic to Mormon theological doctrine, the theology developed for the most part within the concrete historical context and was not derived from the metaphysics. And yet, although it is not chronologically prior the metaphysics by its very nature has kind of a logical priority over the theology. So although the theological doctrines are not necessarily deducible from the metaphysical principles, the metaphysics once defined sets the limits for, and in a sense indicates the direction of theological development. I don't know if any of you have read that quote before, but it's basically, he's saying, it all came through revelation, but as bits and pieces of this came through, we sort of ended up with this metaphysical vision of eternal intelligences and, all that fun stuff that you see. And so he says, even though the history was first, the scripture was first, the metaphysics sort of has that priority. And then, so whenever I find a struggle, or I think part of our task today was to sort of say, how do you, wrestle when the two conflict? I sort of just go with metaphysical mornings. I go with that sense and that taste of the universe, generally over the more specific things that might say, one life only, all that other stuff that you find there. Just in closing, I wanted to say, and then probably of all the New Age things I'm most interested in, I'm actually interested quite a bit in extraordinary human capacity. So that would be my interest in him. Just if anybody hasn't ever heard of this book by Michael Mercer, The Future of the Body, I'd recommend it to anyone as sort of giving this chance. He's fairly cautious. He is the founder of Esalen. But and Esalen has really become, and I think the vision of what Esalen became was not Michael Murphy's vision. And so I think he's a very interesting, and this is a good introduction to sort of the ideas about extraordinary human capacities. Just before I go too long, I'd just like to say that I do like New Agers. So even though I may not be comfortable with that, I really like what they stand for. For the most part, it's clear that they're interested in bettering themselves. I like the peace that seems to be an emphasis of theirs. They're environmentalists. They seem to want to see each other as a genuine human family. And I'd be pleased if those goals would all be realized, and so I actually look forward to a new age, but perhaps one where we don't jump on the bandwagon. One last thought. You've all heard of the book, If You Need a Buddha on the Road. Yeah, I think that's an interesting thing, because there are so many new age figures, and especially the ones that set themselves up. And I kind of used the term just by accident in dinner with Carolyn yesterday. Yeah, I prefer the accidental gurus. The ones who aren't trying to do it. And I think one of the things that I like about Mormon doctrine, or at least our sense of things, is that whatever God's capacities are, and you think about most either extraordinary capacities or whatever, these we assume by definition that God has, I think it is genuinely possible for human beings to have bits and pieces of that, and for some human beings to be farther advanced in these particular gifts than others. But I think the cautionary note that I would want to add, and I'll always try to, whenever I'm really enamored with somebody, is to say, well, just because they may be more advanced in their ability to know what's happening, over there, doesn't necessarily mean that they're at the same level of advancement in wisdom, or that we should ever become a follower of this. So again, my note to you is, I appreciate New Age, cautious about it. Generally think Mormons can do pretty well with it, and so I hope all of you here who are New Agers know that the fun is to have one of you.
Okay, when I joined the church when I was, I can't remember, either 16 or 17, and the thing that attracted me most to the gospel was the fact that Joseph had seen a vision, and I had some mystical experiences when I was younger, and I was a poet, and a musician, and an artistic type, and so it was really cool. It seemed to me that if Joseph saw a vision, and what he taught was that everybody could, you know, that I could get my own vision, that I could see Christ, or that you know, that I could have these experiences. That's what attracted me to the church, and so I think that a lot of the things that we think of as being New Age concepts, they suddenly feel familiar to us. They feel familiar to me. For example, the general synthesis and re-mystification. Ritual mysticism, well, we have the temple, a sacred space. We have Mormon ritual in the temple, and we have our garments that sacralize our bodies and sacralize the space around us. Sacred texts, you know, we've got the Book of Mormon, the Course in Miracles, you're going to prophets, we've got the Dalai Lama and Joseph Campbell and, you know, other people. Belief in having chosen our own incarnation, channeling, personal revelation. We never lose our identity, that's in religion, intuition. And a congruence and integration of religion and our experience, religion's spiritual experience with science. And I think New Age allows Mormon to resonate, some of these things resonate with us, to express familiar these familiar concepts that don't have a forum in the church. You're not going to go to church and discuss most of these things at church. I also think because New Age is more a social entity than a group of people that have completely shared all these, you know, specific shared beliefs, also makes sense to Mark, because I guess I have a quote from Mark P. Leone who says it's more appropriate to think of Mormonism than to speak of a uniform structure of doctrine or belief. He says that there are two affirmations of irreducible belief: Joseph had a vision and the church is true. And beyond that, we all interpret those things in a variety of different ways, and so that gives me a lot of latitude where I can look at these different things and then negotiate those agreements in different ways, personally and communally. And so there are reasons, though, that I wasn't interested in New Age all my life. There are reasons that I am now attracted to New Age, and I think that there are some of these reasons are reasons that other Mormons are attracted to New Age. And number one is that faithful Mormons who are mystical by nature or they're bored, correlation doesn't fill their needs. Correlation just simply does not fill my spiritual needs. I can't sit in Sunday school anymore. I can go to sacrament meeting, okay, but I can't sit in Sunday school or with a society because I don't hear anything spiritual there, really. I don't. I can't interpret it in a spiritual way. The second is that those who have mystical or spiritual experiences out of the blue, you know, wouldn't have considered themselves mystical, they can't find the tools in Mormonism. I couldn't find the tools in Mormonism with which to interpret those experiences or to integrate them at all. And number three, if you've been depressed or if you've had a crisis, then you can't self-soothe. I have not ever felt, as a faithful Mormon, that I really had the tools to self-soothe. Pray, but I really felt like once I found meditation, I had a tool with which to self-soothe that I couldn't find anywhere else. Prayer never soothes me because it didn't teach me how to listen. The way I was taught to pray didn't teach me how to listen. It didn't teach me how to be still and to be okay, because in praying, I was running away from feelings. I was running away from experiences. Please help me wake up tomorrow and be a different person. Meditation and some of these, I know meditation is not, Buddhism is not technically New Age, but it is, it does fall into those, because you go into a New Age bookstore and you can find, Buddhism, and there's the idea of Buddhism without beliefs, which I don't know if that's possible. That's debatable. I know within the studies context. My main interest has been in Buddhist practices and in neo-paganism. And I also want to say that I think we get to interpret what it means to be a supermarket spirituality person. You know, the smorgasbord. Well, you can look at that as a negative, or you can look at that as a positive. I choose for myself to frame that in a positive light. So I can take some practices from Buddhist practices, and I can take some other practices, and I can put them all together in a way that seems holistic to me, and it helps heal me, and helps me be more, you know, better person. So I'm particularly attracted to neo-paganism. I don't guess make it under the moon, I haven't gotten there yet. But that interest comes out of a specific desire as a woman to develop my own sense of expression and personal power. It provides for me a participatory worldview that is similar to that found in the church, but I get to choose how I participate. I used to be on the bandwagon for women's priesthood, and I still am. I still think it's really important, but I just in the last couple of weeks realized that I don't want it anymore because I have moved. I realized in watching my husband and my sons and my friends pass the sacrament do those things that they're out there too. You know, they don't get to choose how they exercise their priesthood. They've got all these rules and regulations. They can't sit without looking at a book or asking permission or is this okay for me to do, and it's all written out, and it's just I'm not interested in that. Women's spirituality with its emphasis on goddess as I imagine her. I don't have to worship Demeter. I can have my own idea of what Heavenly Mother looks like if I want to call her that, and I get to image her. I get to imagine her. And it doesn't have to be pagan. There's some women's spirituality, goddess worship that is explicitly Christian. I can take from that, or not. Or I can take. I can make my own rituals. It's incredibly empowering to lay out in the pool and lay there with a pen on my little floaty that my kids got me for Mother's Day and write my own ritual and talk to my Heavenly Mother, talk to the goddess, and I have never felt anything more empowering. Not in the temple, not anywhere. So women's spirituality helps me develop my own energetic and emotional power and the self-insight to be of service, like priesthood, so it doesn't force me to turn over my agency to a hierarchical authority. I don't have to join a group. I don't have to go join a women's spirituality group. I get to, you know, if I want to, I can. I can do both if I want. But no set of rules constrains me to be one or the other. I'm also attracted to tarot, specifically, because there's no time limit. I look at it as a tool. It doesn't. My first temple experience was so distressful. I've been married actually twice in the temple, had the first two in the temple. But the first time I went, they rushed me through. I had all these questions, and they didn't want to answer them. Hurry, 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 we've got another session coming in. They didn't want to talk to me. I never found it a place for open inquiry to really sit and be. Even if I was sitting in the specialist, someone always wanted to come and move me along over the years as I've done that. So I never found it. So with tarot, I get to choose the imagery. There are a million different decks. I'm actually going to create my own. And I get to self-interpret. And that helps me to find meaning in the guidance that, you know, that isn't, I don't have to mediate that through any other external authority. I mean, I can read the little book and see what the symbolism means, but I can use it as a psychological tool that helps me understand better myself, where what my options are. It helps me to self-soothe, basically, so I don't have to drink. And it allows me to believe that I can have an effect on my own environment, and I don't have to run it through the church's mediatory plan. So those are, those are the things I'm interested in. I do feel like I fit into that category. I haven't completely moved. I'm not all that active. I go to sacrament meetings a couple of times a month, but I don't want to leave. I have a family. My husband's extremely active. He's a volunteer in the temple. But it allows me to sit for a second. These things allow me to enrich me in such a way that I don't have to. And so, for me, it is a supplement. For others, it can be a replacement. I can't imagine why anybody, although I know many people do, for me, I could never leave the Mormon Church and then go and join some other hierarchical organization. Why would I want to do that? And maybe it's the difference in the way I have shifted my interpretation of what truth means. I don't have to, leave this church and try to find another true church like my oldest daughter who became Catholic. She said, this is the true church. I'm like, why would you do that? I just look at this in a different way. So that's it. Thank you.
My experiences with New Age only began about 5 years ago, and for background, I was born and raised in a church. I very conservative, very orthodox Mormon, went to 4 years of seminary, went to I really enjoyed my meeting and everything I'm doing. I loved the gospel. I went to BYU, graduated in education, military education, and then I did a mission to Italy, came back and cut tour for 3 years, got married, and have five children, and so I'm a homemaker, and so I work part time as a substitute, and this was the farthest thing from my mind. I was so fully entrenched in that I don't know. I think very pathological, and it's kind of normally this arrogance of having the truth. And so much, my brother, 10 years ago, my brother happened to be there, and he was a person. He was studying theology and comparative religions, and I'm like, why? I couldn't even fathom that. I respected him. I respected his passion for it, but it just didn't make any sense. But one day, 5 years ago, in October, I was completely blind. I was hit with revelation. I was the Holy Spirit that conditioned me out of the incarnation of the true principle. I hadn't even read the word for 2 years. I hardly knew what it was. I had seen it in a world history text that I was helping a student do, something I'm reading as a paragraph. I knew nothing. I hadn't studied it out in my mind. I hadn't even been exposed to it. But there was clearly something to see. But community, it kind of left me reeling for a few days, and I was just awestruck. And it was a stunning Christmas. And I remember a few days later walking into a bookstore, and I went into the New Age section, which I have always, they thought it was taboo, forbidden. And, I'd never looked at any of those books, and I couldn't show that section. And once again, the Holy Ghost was so clear, he said, you have a lot of catching up to do. And from that point on, I covered religion, and I enjoyed, studying everything from studies and divorce, I study in varying degrees of that. Mostly I just survey things, and I've had a really, really wonderful adventure being in the truth and seeing how we all fit together. I'm not trying to be sorry about it, and I don't even take notes. It's just a real, enriching experience. I felt like, I had kind of been put on top of the mountain, and then I hadn't traversed the way up, and I had to go back and fill in the blanks and how this happened. And for example, my particular path, as I understand it, through intuition and the Holy Ghost, is to try to just use only the tools of the Holy Ghost and with my ability to read. I've tried to stay very mainstream and learn them. And I, for example, if I'll read a book for an astral travel, I kind of skim it. I don't read the techniques. It's like I've almost had this courage to not practice it. It's like my job is to get testimony, without actually experiencing it. So I just read the experiences of others. So it's still very faith-based. and very difficult task because I have no actual knowledge. It's not intuitive based. And Jim said, I can honestly say these past 5 years have been the best of time, and we have to use them. I think the moving there that is difficult is as part of this whole process. The whole that led me to, I kind of put me through a spiritual period of the spiritual gymnastics and jumping through those hoops and becoming so responsive to connect to human community. Promising, and some of them are very difficult, and some of that's like sacrifice, for example, right in the beginning of college, it cannot work for several months, and just have faith that I could live without an income, and that was really hard, and besides what my family said, but just to learn to have that faith, and I remember as part of that process, about 5 years, 5 months into that, and my bishop called me in. I wouldn't have normally gone in to tell him that I gave him the information, but he called me in, especially if he hadn't been looking for the best for me. And, you know, I think it was crazy. I mean, we were just couldn't find him that, and so I had to go into the student thing, and I felt when I did, and probably told him too much. And, so therefore, when I went to try to get my temple recognized and meet with my father, he, you know, was very reluctant. And I happened to be normally a more conforming type person, much more comfortable in that. I hated hanging out alone. I hated being on Zen. It was not a good experience for me. And it was not fun to try to, you know, convince him. And so I had to be patient about 6 months and go through that. Every month of interview about it, which took like an hour. Until he finally realized that he had no valid reason to deny it. And so when, and then he still sent me to the state president to make sure, and, you know, that he wasn't wrong. But he still can't fathom it, how I could believe and put the brother and the prophet and believe in a doctrine that is not sanctioned by the church, not the bishop. So that was not a fun experience. But as far as reconciling, you know, real truth is based on personal revelation. Yeah, I didn't speak afterwards, they came, I believe in the magnetic faith, and we believe in that the God will yet reveal. You know, pertaining to the kingdom of God. So, you know, I know that there's a lot more to come. Yeah, and what was surprising to me was I looked at this, there's already so much truth here. I was blown away at all these different esoteric doctrines, and there's a lot of probably confusion, and I can't say I based all of it wholeheartedly, and there are some discrepancies and things that don't agree with it, but it's scattered all over the earth. It really is, and it's fun to try to keep it together. And that way it is the best of time, because it has been so broadening and so enriching for me. I read the scriptures now because of what I've read outside. They have all these different meanings of connection. And it is fun. And I tolerate fine going to church because I'm always looking for the hidden meanings and the little different layers of truth. And so I totally have it. And I love this church. I still feel compelled with it. But our theology is such that it's open-ended, it's expanding, and it will one day embrace our truth. And so this is kind of like a little preview of things to come. Thank you.
Pretty well known New Age maxim, and you create your own reality. So keep that in mind as this. Hi, ma'am. Aren't you this? This is my lovely daughter, Emily. And a thank you. Okay, it seems a Catholic priest and, let's say, a Mormon bishop and a New Age devotee die and go to hell. And the Catholic priest says, it is so hot down here. I wish I were not here. And the Mormon bishop says, indeed it is so hot.
Oh, I wish I were not here.
And that you and Mr. Hilton said, did not
I? I am not him.
Well, I was dragged kicking and screaming into New Age conflict by my husband. And I have ended up being very much of a sometimes skeptical but frequently highly enthusiastic experiencer and learner about what we call New Age conflict. I think my husband Gerald was really one of the absolute first pioneer Mormon New Age adventurers. And he himself was thrust into that position by his paradoxical situation. For those of you who don't know, I was married for 12 years to a man that I loved very much, a very dear man, who also happened to be a homosexual man. And Lisa mentioned the idea of coming up against of a situation where religion per se cannot give the answers. And certainly, my husband's religion could not give him the answers to the dilemma that he experienced so deeply within himself. And so he became a pioneer, determined. I mean, you cannot imagine the determination of this man to find out the answers to why his experience and his and the religion that he totally accepted were at such absolute brutal odds. And so right at about that time of our marriage and the subsequent years, just when the New Age things began to become really accessible to one another, and he was right out there hungrily devouring everything, sincerely determined to find the answer. And it was interesting to me because I was always curious, but it also made me really scared because it was just not something that felt really comfortable to me. But nevertheless, I joined him in this journey because I too had issues that were not being well answered by my religion, which was coincidentally his religion. My religion then and now does not give me adequate answers to the place of the feminine in the universe. And that was a burning question for me. And that is one of the givens of, at least as I see New Age thought, central to most of it is an acknowledgement of the return of feminine energy and of a place of the female in the universe. And so, synchronistically, my husband's unanswered questions and my unanswered questions, both of them being basically about gender, led us, him first, believe me, he was way out there before me, searching, saying there have to be answers to these dilemmas. And so he began to bring in all of these interesting, scary thoughts. He and I were among the first to meditate in Portland, Utah, back in the late 60s. And it was really looked upon as a very weird thing by people in general there. If you talked about it, it was no place to even put this. But we were actually, given the initiation into TM, or Transcendental Meditation, which soon became very well acknowledged thing throughout corporations and governments. And so meditation was one of the things that came in here. There was one of the first copies, I expect, of the Course in Miracles, which is basic to much of the writing that people have done about. And On that particular time, for those of you who have read my book, The Why I Love You, that the time when I became aware that that the homosexual problem in my marriage had not been solved as I had assumed that it had been. Jared was away, and I didn't mention the book where he was, but he was in California at Esalen at a week-long seminar of Robert Monroe teaching people to astral project, to, you know, leave your body and be able to move around in the universe. Jared was so determined to find ultimate answers for himself. So that's where he was. He didn't actually find all of the answers for himself. He did find many. And I have found many. But the whole thing has certainly enriched his and certainly my personal spiritual journey. Joel sent me to a week-long ESP conference that was sort of my first real immersion in all of these amazing things that dovetail into what we talk about as psychic phenomena. And I found it all just amazingly interesting and frightening and thrilling that spiritual activity is going on everywhere. That was scary, and that was very thrilling to me, very affirming to me, really. Gerald dragged me along to past life regression seminars given by Dick Sutphen and Helen Lombach, both of whom have written on this subject. And yes, I was able to visualize things. I did not have the profound experience I'd hoped for, which I hope to have. Gerald had a little curling in photography set up that he bought and took pictures of all of the children and I. We went into my big closet and we all had our photograph with this unusual photography that could supposedly photograph the aura, which was all very, very exciting stuff. I mean, this is just a new way to explore the existence of the spirit. So the things that have remained with me, and since then, I have had times of, you know, putting all that stuff away, not because I found it really threatening, but because other things took my interest. Though I will have to admit that the other things that took my interest are not unrelated to what we're talking about here as New Age inquiry. My tremendous passion for study about and writing about women's spirituality certainly is part and parcel of this whole thing, the bringing back of the feminine. I have now done my work in that, and I'm no longer performing my play, Mother of the Morning. I do have the video for those of you who, for whom that is still a really a part of the hunger that you're experiencing. I've got a couple of them right here with me if you wanted to take a look at that. But what I'm finding right now that I am mostly experiencing and fascinating with, one of the avenues is, as many of you know, I just gave a session on synchronicity. And I suppose that, you'd find that on the New Age section in the bookstore. Though most of these things have very dignified ancient roots. And it is fair to nobody to kind of speak of them as a little thin New Age thing that's just kind of being brought out of the air by some modern people who are making something up. It's really revitalizing ancient roots of practically everything that can qualify in this New Age thought is not new at all. It's our remembrance and reevaluation. I am holding in my hand what I just got last night, which is the very first copy of my book that's just barely, I left in the bookstore until the beginning of September. But consider the butterfly subtitle, Transforming Your Life Through Meaningful Coincidence. This is a supposed New Age phenomenon that has really, absolutely in the last number of years been so thrilling to me. For those of you who would like to get this book, I'm walking around with my little page here. And Suzette, since you're my friend, I want to ask Emily, would you just give half of those to, I ask Emily too much, just give half of those to one side and to the other. I just want you all to have that sheet about my book, and there's a little order from there in case you want it. And I have some more here if you don't have enough there. So synchronicity is really my particular specialty that right now I'm so riveted on in this whole New Age phenomenon. And the other thing that I am extraordinarily interested in studying and in practicing is energy healing. Now, this is a very old thing, but the fact that we're now looking at it as a very, as a method, as something that people can learn, that we can learn to raise the vibrational level of our hands and consequently entrain the vibrational level of the person that we're working on. That is a wonderful, new, and to me, extraordinarily thrilling idea. And I am reading and studying, and I've attended two very important seminars from people who are to teach various methods of them, and developing my own way. And in the session last night, I was sitting by my dear friend Kim McCauley, said, "You kind of asked me in your person, I've got a terrible headache." I said, "Oh, Kim, I love to hear people have headaches. Sit down." So they didn't sit down in front of me, and I did a little hands-on massage. But then I did for about half an hour, just plain energy work inches away from the head, and it was very, very helpful and alleviating his pain. I have many, many, many successes in helping to remove pain. So this, as an invitation via supposed New Age concept, inviting me without what we call priesthood, which is certainly one very valid way to tap in to use of spiritual healing, but for me to acknowledge that I have, that all of us have, avenues to invite spiritual gifts, to do it without anybody's permission, to listen to whatever gurus are there if we choose, but essentially to become our own guru. This is the gift, essentially, that my experience in New Age thinking has given to me, to say, wow, I am my own guru. I am a powerful spiritual being. I will listen to and trust the words of everybody else in as much as it harmonizes with the truth that I know. And I will also know that I personally can, in a variety of ways, receive that truth and participate in it in a way that is richer than I ever had thought before.
Thank you so much. Other than Dan, this is my first opportunity to meet Susan, Karen, and Dan, for what? So, and quite a last first meeting. This is a wonderful occasion for me. And I hope it is for you, too. I hope you are sensing your own, how your own spiritual ideas fit in with some of this, and we'd like to hear from you. And now's the time. Comments? I'm going to have to have you come up here. I want you to go to the room. Mr. Please feel free to come up here and connect what you have to say with other things that are said, if you would. And,
How's your knee doing? Yeah. I'm going to get trained. I've been very interested in coffee for years and years. And I'd like to add two components to what this speaker talked about. One of it is that there's a lot of stuff out there, and all of it's wonderful and fascinating, and possibly true in some sense and possibly not in another. And the big question is how to fit through it, how to make sense of this real sense. And there have been a number of writers who have been interested in this topic over the years. Association called the Association of Transpersonal Psychology. Transpersonal means developing yourself beyond your limited sense of self, and those experiences beyond our limited own self experiences, so that they're way beyond our limited identity. Probably one of the better writers in that area is a woman named Frances Vaughn, and she's recently written a book called Shadows of the Sacred, Seeing Through Spiritual Illusions, and she was raised with 15 sorting through what's authentic and not authentic. There's an older book by Ken Wilber, who's one of my gurus, I would say, although it's harder to read than her book. It's called Spiritual Choices, and he systematically analyzes which spiritual systems will yield what kinds of results. What kind of results authoritarian systems do, what kind of results egalitarian systems do, and so on. And I have found that very important because of all the spiritual gifts, I really think the spirit of discernment is as important as the spirit of revelation, or the spirit of laying hands of healing and so on, to know when it is and when not. The other thing I've been very interested in is how do we develop ourselves as personalities so we become more and more mature spiritually? How do we use these experiences in a transparent enough way that we grow and not just access to the divine and the spirit and then kind of drop back down like many others want to go on? I do believe that this kind of approaching, knowing not only how, but having access more and more, and learning and practicing ways to access spiritual things, unfolds our growth. But unless we work at the places where we're still constricted and we don't even have trouble, we're just going to work back and forth there. And so there's been a lot of people who've been doing that also. Ken Wilber, what I mentioned, is one of those authors, LDER. And I think it's a long-term process. A lot of people have really given their hand to, and so I consider these two issues about development as well as being to convincing and understanding what's real about all of these. One of the most exciting and interesting things of all, and I would say it's given me a way to understand Mormonism more fully, to live my life more vibrantly, and to have an inherent intrinsic sense of meaningfulness. You can follow this with me.
My name is Kathy Tyner. I'm from Southern California, and I think it's really exciting that we could just learn more of you. I guess I would say just began as a child, because even though my dad was a hard-boiled cynical cop, he always had this side of interest in mystical things. He still very much believed in God, and I was raised in Catholicism and raised in the Mormon. So this would keep coming back with certain unanswered questions, although I found the church satisfying many things. It was like a girl. There were some things that I couldn't seem to find the tools for, and I keep being told by people whose wisdom I trusted I was meant to do things with my hands. I'm craft challenged, I'm not mechanical, and I'm not Molly Mormon. So I kept going, what are you talking about? But it kind of all congealed very quickly, finally,
very recently in the last year. He sent his son on a mission. He had to return to his social anxiety disorder, we didn't know. And he was diagnosed with it. My health was beginning to suffer. My daughter's always been a really creative kid. She wanted yoga. She loves that kind of exercise. I found something in the phone book that I was already attuned to Reiki. I've already achieved Reiki Master. And all of a sudden I found something called John Hawk, which meshes so closely in many of their beliefs and practices with Mormonism that I've been able to share with them. I'm in something called a healer school, and before I left, I had my husband give me a blessing, who told me that I would go and learn some truths that were hidden long from the world that will add, and it has. It's added to my Mormonism. It's added to the sense of things for me. It is a healing modality. I've learned to talk to Carolyn because I've always been able to do that and not understand it. That I don't find it in conflict, that I've talked with other people in this modality who are Christians. He said, how do you cope with this? And I said, if things something confuses me, the scripture will come and it makes sense to me. And that I've been able to share with the Master's teaching what one believes, and they're very pleased. They find it meshes too. It's just all been like coming to this point that I never would have pictured just a few months ago. And that I'm really working on people and having them say, I don't know what you're doing to me, but whatever you're doing to me, it works. And I just tell them it's like chicken soup. You can't understand it, but it works. So I'm really excited that there's movement in this direction, and that, I don't know, I guess I've always been different in years, so I'm not having problems with getting called in by the bishop or going what's going on here. They're allowing me to teach some of these exercises in Relief Society at an enrichment night. And I will warn people who want to look into it. If you're in the liturgy, if you're not comfortable with it, they'll explain it to you. You can take this much, if that's all you want to take from it. And the exercise and meditation will help. It's already helped my son with the breathing kind of thing. But what's nice is you can take what you need, and if you can't take any more, you can stop there. But I also agree with the spirit of discernment that just keeps filtering. But I've prayed about it. It's been right for me, and it's just been fun. Thank you.
Here you can see a little bit of the marriage testimony here. So I'm Paul Smith, and I recognize some of you from my session yesterday when I was down in Missouri. I've been wrestling with this issue of how to integrate New Age elements and the testimony of a church into one's life. So for about the last 2 decades, I've been always certainly going to be a hypothesis. And it's interesting. In fact, in 1989, I did a presentation to someone in Mormonism in the New Age. One of the conclusions that came from that paper was that people tend to be attracted to New Age today, for many of them are usually attracted to Mormonism and used to the days of the age. In fact, if there's an opportunity for business or spiritual empowerment today to get outside the box, the restrictions of that kind of multicultural Christianity, ability to transcend the current members of the world and gain insights and stuff that wasn't available in the current structure and stuff out of the world. And our total conclusion was that we've lost a lot of that from the Mormon community. It's not just gone through the gospel, it's not just gone through the teachings of God, it's at the same time to actually have raised my life. And what I finally discovered over my years of trying to put all this together is that you can't actually integrate the truths that are existing here in the village community at large. You can't integrate them in the gospel. It's your own Mormon experience and stay out from the church. At least that's been my experience. But it's something that you can't just expect it to come to you. The church is not going to change this with you. I found Caleb a lot of benefit in being an advocate in a gentle sort of way for a lot of these new insights and things. Very new insights, the insights that we made in the last couple of decades as churches sort of modernizing the way they are going to do it. So I don't know, I don't really have much of a message other than the fact that it is possible to put the two of these together. And in fact, we could production. You do have to be cautious. And talking about what we're going to with our fellow members, I have only had two negative experiences of that. One was a bishop who was very doctrinal, and when I told him what I was doing, when I was doing the military and what I was doing privately, he was very skeptical and was wondering how that was affecting our marriage in the church. Yet, since he works for National Security Agency, as soon as I turned his over, so he was okay with it. The other one is actually a calling show in Tokyo, Utah, with Jerry Dan on the phone, times on the radio. And we wanted to say that this was all like the devil, you know, if it wasn't really the church construct, it was all of the devil. And fortunately, I had a couple of very useful quotes from David Young that kind of touched that. I started to agree with him. Anyway, just I want to encourage you, I think you can explore the marriage and serving people to the church. So, thanks.
The case and to make sure we understand your question. The question is, what about involving yourself in these ideas, but not so much to the point where you reach, you can't resolve it, or you can't, you've got a tension between what you know intellectually or what you're feeling, or am I getting the question right? From the outside. And how do you visit that uncertainty of not knowing? I've got lots of thoughts, but let's start with you guys. And you need to pull up, yeah, so that we get it on tape. You don't have a mic.
That's where Buddhist practice has particularly helped me, meditation and the idea that it is possible to live with uncertainty. We're so tied into knowing the truth about everything, that when you are able to not know the truth and just kind of live with the uncertainty and realize that you can still have know the truth about some things but not about others, and that's not an aberration, it's not a bad thing. It's how we just frame it, and I think Buddhist practice is really helping me do that the most. And you don't have to join anything.
I don't think there are any New Age missionaries that go around 2x2 asking if they get baptized into New Age thought. It's totally scrambled and totally chaotic. So I think the only answer to your question is if any ideas interest you, that's where your mind wants to go. And just be open enough to read this book or attend this lecture or think about this without any compunction that you got to do anything about it. If it enriches your life, let it enrich your life. End of story.
The very most important thing I learned in my undergraduate years at BYU was how to hold a parent in my hand. That was one thing they taught me as a freshman. If I was going to survive and learn something and take it away, I had to be able to do that. To remain unresolved is the highest thing you can do in education. It is not easy. And I suspect not everybody had that experience with BYU. It was a remarkable experience that I had at BYU. But that is something to be valued.
to not be closed and to believe that you have it all. Does that help at all?
I jumped up a little quick, but I wanted to simply say again, I personally have not joined, so I don't even practice. The closest I really have come was organizing that workshop on Wednesday on meditation. I thought more of you would want to join me, because I was really for the first time, I was actually thinking about, you know, doing that in my life. And so it was fun to have Dennis Genpo Roshi from the Zen Meditation Center teach us a little bit of techniques, and we actually did something called the Big Mind Process with us. So again, for me, my interest is in most of it to put the world together. But sort of in response to Mary Beth's comment about how do you sit and the spirit of discernment, I thought that it would be important. And it's come up with Lisa early on, it came up with Carolyn just now. I'm pretty pragmatic with this, and I mean, I'm seriously working on my Zen pragmatics, and I'm talking William James, and I'm talking in a fairly serious way, and just to give you the quick three principles of the pragmatic sort of method for determining value in truth, and that's, first of all, is cash value. You've probably heard that term. In other words, if an idea comes to you, it moves you, it gets you moving in the world, it makes you want to face the day with more energy and to live life strenuously and embrace a new adventure, William James would say that would be the idea that you should go with. But the second one, sort of cautionary on that one. Okay, look at this new idea and then see if it matches your own experience. So in other words, if you're faced with two things and there's no way to decide it anyway, the best thing you should do is say, okay, does this idea match my own personal experience better than that idea? So he says, for instance, we don't know if we're free or if we're determined. But, you know, my own experience is I read somebody who murders his wife, and they tell all the details and what's happening to me. I'm getting angry, and I'm getting upset, and I'm wanting justice. So William James is saying, your experience is telling you that we're free. Because if it was determined, that would not be there. So he's basically saying there's unresolvable problems in the world, unresolvable questions. So the second thing is to pick the one that matches that. And the third one, and this is the one that's not quite as clear in him, and actually want to develop an article, so I think I read this in him. The third thing is to say, when you're confronted again with choices between things, you ask yourself, which one of these things can grow better than the other one? Which one has more expansive ability? Which one is going to say, the universe is this big? And which one might say, I can embrace and talk to and interact with more truths? And so that one, to me, is the one that sort of is the capper for all the rest, because as I fall down, or as I go, and like a friend said, I shared that I'm not really that interested in astrology. But I would hope that this third sort of thing, if it came, you know, as I'm looking at the pragmatic value, the cash value, and I'm saying it's not my experience, but if somehow or other I was running into something, I want to be able to be moved by it. And so again, so somehow this third idea here of which one grows and which one doesn't grow, to me is a sort of a way of eventually steering us in the right direction. So rather than just getting excited, you have this more comprehensive thing. So that's my thoughts a little bit, besides, you know, prayer and discernment, in other words, so with the pragmatic truth. His book Pragmatism is a series of lectures that he gave, and so I would start there. Let me think about a few more essays. I'll be happy to chat with you afterwards, but yeah, it's very clear, quite.
And in case you're not familiar with William James, he is in a great book. This is, you know, accepted by the Western world. And then there's also Alma 32 that gives the blueprint for how to deal with unresolved issues or issues that don't make sense. You make room for the belief, even if you can no more than desire to believe. And you let it grow. You see how it feels. And then you ask them to see how that feels. I know you think about wanting to know what questions they were doing. Although that's the purpose of education.
have to answer it. I don't have any questions. Yes, come on. I find this question so interestingly paradoxical because one of my dear friends who has left one of them has tried so hard to dislodge, in a way, the power of personal, the belief that the spiritual witness is the ultimate way of discerning truth, because they said, you gotta face history. Gotta face the facts. You know, there's a lot of effort, I think, at some point to try to reconcile history with spiritual witness. And so I see, you know, an interesting kind of paradox here that we want to hold in our hand, I guess, between, you know, our desire to perhaps trust spiritual witness even more as we face, evidently scientific or whatever kind of historical or, you know, whatever other verifiable methods we have of discerning or perceiving truth. So, just an interesting paradox that I'm observing.
My name is Cliff Ross. We have the lady from California. I'm kind of excited that this is happening because for me and this experience, just in over 10 years, since I've expressed my new age beliefs to a group of LDS people. And to share that quickly with you, being clairvoyant since about 8 years old, I've learned quickly that I don't do that with other members of the church. And one of my experiences just before I left on our mission was I walked off the pulpit and walked up to a member and said, by the way, your grandmother will be here with a story, and that woman no longer talks to me. But I use a lot of the same tools, women use the pearls, and I use those tools. So I find you should be able to find the balance. I haven't. I have to leave that experience with church somewhere else and go outside of it. Interesting enough, I found, for me, I didn't think I'd find it there, but through Catholicism and Protestant faith, we're much more open to me sharing that with them. So it's been a fun journey. I'm still learning it and developing it and working with it. So, and the other thing is, my spirit guide's female. That always doesn't go very well either. Along with a lot of members in the church when we get talking about it. So that is sometimes a bit. So thank you for doing this.
My name's Rex. My brother's been part of this. He's not part of Mormonism, but he's been part of New Age stuff for 2 or 3 years, and we just always passed as an outcast. But I was reading the other day in the Old Testament about all these different prophets, and so this is going to come as a different question or thing, because I read in how the king of the Moabites, called for us and saying a different prophet to curse the children of Israel. Therefore, knowing that each case or each group of the children of God all have a prophet or a leader of some sort. So how much of this New Age stuff is based on just their spiritual level to increase it up to a higher level? So today our spiritual level, we start at a very basic speaking where you have it all checked out, the ultimate goal is temple and some great temple supposedly to learn more and increase your spirituality. Whereas some have meditation, some have tarot cards, and some of this. So is this just your thoughts of, is this just a way of increasing spirituality of the children of God, as from very basics to more complex, how you reach the ultimate inner peace or revelations or knowledge of the existence or the surety of God or deity?
So that's the purpose and use of these things. And maybe from an inferior source.
Let me just review this quickly and see if we've got it, because you're taking from the Old Testament, where they went to another prophet to find out some information. And obviously, that prophet had some kind of spiritual gift, because the information was received. And so you're wondering whether these spiritual gifts that may not come from the authority of the church are for good. Okay, so they may not come from the line of authority that we recognize as the church today. And what is their purpose? Is it outside? Is it to build people up from a lower level of spirituality to a higher one? Okay. Does that clarify it for you? If not, then you're not supposed to answer.
I would just suggest that wherever anybody finds spiritual food, spiritual opening, spiritual ritual, spiritual anything, the intent can only be, yes, to move them forward on their spiritual journey. Now, in the church, we talk about eternal progression, meaning we've got to keep moving and moving, becoming more, until we indeed become as God. So, wherever insights come that assist us in becoming more godly, whether it happens within our church, or for somebody else in their church, or for somebody without a church, whether it comes from going to a seminar or whatever, the only possible purpose, if it is an authentic good one, is for them to receive something that will assist them on their journey to become more of themselves, which is closer to God. And one of the things I forgot to mention is that I continue to have a very strong meditation practice. That, along with the things that I mentioned, I have called out as something that I know to be truly, truly valuable. And I took a 4.5-day seminar from Deepak Chopra, whom I consider to be an amazing man, as close to perhaps a prophet as I'm going to find in this particular age, in terms of blending so well thoughts from all over in a way that makes sense and that encourage us to become more of our divine being.
Just two thoughts, I have them on my hands. For me, section 93, I think it's verse 24, has the idea that truth is independent. There's no language there. But the idea that no matter what, good ideas have independent energy. And so that people can stumble onto them all the time. And I really kind of sort of take God out of the blessing business and sort of sense that the universe is far more lively on its own. And so, for instance, the end of section 121, where it talks about without compulsory means, things flow unto you. And I prefer something like that, and again, this may just my own personal preference, I prefer something like that over the idea that God blesses me. And a tit-for-tat sort of thing. It's much more like somehow my character has become such, or somehow my heart's become open enough, or somehow I've let my defenses down or something so that more will flow to me. And so rather than God saying, welcome to my kingdom, gold star, it's simply my character has become more godlike, and so these powers and things have come to me. So all I'm saying is, I don't believe in a God who no one can think can enter my presence because I'm so offended by your willfulness. I read that more as just the metaphysical truth that you're not me. And so it's like, you're not gonna have my life because you haven't read the scripture. So I guess this, where does it come from? Where does it fit in and out? I'm just arguing for my preference of a universe that is much more self-governing, or at least where energy attracts.
And wherever you find it, wherever you stumble into it, recognize it as valuable and good, and when it quits being valuable and good, like those pragmatic principles do, not kind of this milk carton theory of the universe, very useful, but when it's empty, trash, move on, but attract the energy there, rather than always just God doing it and blessing us, giving you gifts and
stuff. I feel like we addressed your question. You haven't... Okay. Oh, you go in there.